High oil prices are crushing the economy again. We've got fresh evidence that shows even the apparently booming U.S. is suffering the disinflationary effects of higher oil prices. As we keep saying, higher oil is not inflationary. It may add to the CPI in the short run, but unless oil is rising because demand for it is also rising, it ends up destroying demand and weakening the economy. The latest thoroughly disappointing U.S. economic data from today doesn't just corroborate that view. Those updates, plus the unrelenting rally in China's bond market, points to a lot more to come. Why else is gold surging? It's not inflation. There's no inflation here in what we're seeing. So let's start with the U.S. PMIs that came out just today. S&P Global's thoroughly disappointing. All expectations were that these would continue to rise, and instead, they took another step back that is sort of the inverse correlation to oil prices. The manufacturing PMI fell to 49.9. These are the flash readings for the month of April. So it's back below 50, down 2 months in a row after peaking back in February, which suggests that oil might be weakening as well. Because the U.S. manufacturing PMI, anyway, there's more of a direct correlation with oil prices. We saw that way back from 2022 in the initial oil price spike. The U.S. manufacturing PMI, after that initial spike, dropped with oil until December of 2022. Then the early part of last year, WTI stabilizes and the manufacturing PMI starts to rise, suggesting that increasing demand for goods, increasing use of energy, some slight, small demand component to the way the oil prices are behaving. But then April of last year, the banking crisis, both the PMI and oil prices fall off through May and into June. But then on supply considerations more than anything, crude oil stages a huge comeback in the summertime. And it notably diverges from the PMI, the manufacturing PMI, suggesting again that it was more about supply than actual demand last year. And of course, oil continues to go higher through September. Then both of them, the manufacturing PMI as well as WTI, dropped through the end of the final few months of last year. But then we do this all over again starting in January. Crude prices are going higher on supply considerations. There's a small demand component in the first few months of 2024. But since February through March, and now especially with the big drop in April, got manufacturing demand suggesting weakness, and now oil prices are becoming maybe modestly weaker than they had been earlier in the year. Certainly the last couple weeks where oil has come down as geopolitical premiums are traded out of the market with less of an escalation risk in the Middle Eastern conflict. So there's a little bit of a direct correlation with the manufacturing PMI, suggesting there's whatever demand component there may be in crude oil prices, more recently, especially in April, seems to be weakening. The real inverse correlation that shows up in services and really the composite PMI from S&P Global, which is exactly what you would expect. Because oil prices, when you have to pay more for them, not because demand is rising, but because supply is being restricted, you pay more for energy, that leaves you less for other types of spending. Most necessities are usually goods, so it's the service sector that usually ends up on the other side of the oil price demand destruction. That's where the demand destruction actually hits the most. And we can see this, again, inverse correlation. You can use the S&P services PMI, but we'll just use the composite PMI here because it captures pretty much everything in the whole economy. You see the S&P composite PMI peaks in March of 2022, and then it starts falling from there as oil continues on to its biggest surges since 2008. Both the PMI and WTI, they start to weak late in 2022. Though the composite stabilizes as oil prices are coming down, suggesting again, the level of demand destruction is slackening off, so the service sector gets a little bit of breathing room from there. The composite rises with January 2023 as oil prices are safely under $90 a barrel. It goes all the way from 45 in December of 2022 and gets as far as 54.3 by May as, again, oil prices are safely under $90 a barrel. But then June, Oil starts to come back as OPEC and Saudi Arabia take more of an interest on the supply side in stabilizing oil. When they mean stabilize, they mean oil prices go up. So WTI rises through last summer, reaches its peak in September. As it's rising, the PMI drops back and got to 50.1 for October. And so then from there, October, November, December last year, WTI starts to fall again while the composite begins to rebound. Now, it only gets as high as 52.5 in February, again, suggesting that really most of what was going on in oil was all about supply. S&P's services PMI peaked back in January. So the last couple months, especially March and now April, oil is going up and demand is being destroyed, or at least it's suggested to be destroyed. The composite from S&P Global, just 50.9, and clearly heading lower. And heading lower, a lot lower, in April. Now, crude oil is not the only factor in weak demand, the weak demand that we're seeing here in these PMIs. As I mentioned in yesterday's video, credit restriction, the credit environment, loan availability, that's a huge factor, a huge drag on the economy as well. Over the last couple of months in particular, the H8 statistics that I cited in yesterday's video show that consumer lending is actually contracting March in the first half of April where we have data. We also see another downturn in commercial and industrial loans, which gets tied in with the unemployment rate and everything else in the macroeconomy too. So in addition to higher oil destroying demand, we've also got an unfavorable credit environment on top of everything else. So higher oil prices, less credit available, it leads to further weakening indicated in the U.S. statistics. S&P Global, for the first time, mentioned employment, and not in a good way. Under the headline, their press release headline was, Output growth slows amid signs of demand weakness. Again, oil and credit, not really consistent with the idea of a booming economy heading past its soft landing. Here's what S&P Global had to say. Output growth cooled in line with demand weakness as new orders decreased for the first time in 6 months, albeit dropping only modestly. Got to throw the caveats in there. Falling new business was signaled among manufacturers and service providers alike. It was broad-based, apparently. Signs of demand weakness impacted hiring plans at companies in the U.S. at the start of the second quarter. A number of survey respondents indicated that they held off on backfilling positions following the departure of staff. As a result, employment decreased for the first time since June 2020. Now, we've seen employment numbers in the ISM's PMIs. This is the first time we've heard, really, S&P Global single out employment conditions in their data. They continue. The overall reduction in workforce numbers was centered on services, demand destruction, oil, where employment decreased solidly and to the largest extent since the middle of 2020, which suggests these PMIs, for the first time, are corroborating the view of the labor market in the U.S. as seen from the household survey. The unemployment rate, full-time jobs. It sounds exactly what we've been talking about from that side of the employment statistics. While the payroll reports look great, accelerated further this year, S&P Global says, yeah, we're not seeing it here. In fact, we're seeing renewed weakness that has caused employers, for the first time in their data, to really start taking a harder look, a more determined look, at payrolls and jobs. Maybe cutting hours, not hiring people. It sounds a lot like the hiring freeze that we've been saying all along too. More corroboration for real substantial demand weakness in the U.S. economy, in part because of the fact we cannot afford another non-economic increase in energy prices. As the U.S. economy appears to be weaker than many expect it to be or are anticipating it's going to be, we also have to consider trouble around the rest of the world in tandem with that, globally synchronized. There was something interesting in the Federal Reserve's April 2024 Financial Stability Report. Again, I mentioned the Financial Stability Report yesterday. I didn't get to cover this part of it. Toward the end, when they went over the survey responses, They noted that of the market participants that Federal Reserve Bank of New York actually surveyed, one of the most cited potential risks over the next 12 to 18 months popped up in this survey that hadn't been there before. And it was concerns over, quote, severe U.S. and global recession. Again, that hadn't been there in October. Suddenly, about roughly 25% of the responses indicated that they were concerned over the next 12 to 18 months, suddenly about a severe U.S. and global recession. Again, it's interesting it wasn't there in October and it shows up in April. And I don't believe that's necessarily about the U.S. economy alone. I think what these respondents are seeing is there's weakness in the United States, but also when you factor that it's considerably weaker outside the U.S. than inside the U.S., there is the increasing non-trivial chance that that weakness outside the United States, combined with the situation that we actually have here, that may be more like the S&P Global PMIs than, say, the payroll report, the potential for a severe downturn across the entire world, a synchronized downturn, is starting to worry some people in the market that the Federal Reserve is surveying. And from the one perspective, that seems completely in line with everything. And I'm talking, of course, about China. Contrast China's bond market with, say, U.S. Treasuries. U.S. Treasuries have been remarkably stable, except for the will they, won't they about rate cuts in the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is unpredictable. I mentioned recently German rates, for example. Those have been incredibly steady throughout the last couple months. Even as Treasuries have sold off, German bonds have been largely stable. In one place where they're not stable, and not because they're selling off, that's the Chinese government marketplace. Chinese bond yields have been moving decidedly lower ever since the early part of December. So we're talking almost 5 months of an unrelenting rally. China's 10-year government bond is very close to a 20-year low. In fact, it may be below today, depending upon how it settles out in the market. I haven't seen the latest updated closing numbers. The 5-year, the 2-year Chinese government bond yields, they continue to move lower and lower and lower. The 5-year rate is just about 2%, while the 2-year is just above 1.8%. These are the lowest yields for this part of the Chinese curve since the depths of 2020. These are not good signs. This is the market pricing, like any other bond market around the world, lower growth and inflation expectation for a Chinese economy that doesn't have a whole lot of growth and inflation expectations to begin with. This is not about future rate cuts from the PBOC, except that those future rate cuts from the PBOC will be a reflection of what's being priced in the market right now. Considerable risk and risk aversion, safe haven buying in China. And we see all that in the economic statistics that continue to underwhelm. In fact, the latest round of economic data from China, GDP, as well as the industrial production and retail sales numbers, and fixed asset investment, even the Western media is starting to realize China is not turning a corner. If it is turning a corner, it's in the wrong direction, because all of the real estate stats, including the mortgage numbers and credit statistics, they don't look good at all. So China is moving in the wrong direction after having moved in the wrong direction for quite some time already. And of course, that's reflected not just in China's government bond market, but also the currency, CNY. CNY continues to want to go lower. Over the last couple of days, it finally broke below 7.24 to the dollar. And the PBOC, as we expected, is backing down with its midpoint parity, recognizing that the path of least resistance for China's currency is lower. And as we always talk about at Eurodollar University, CNY down equals bad. And CNY down equals bad does not just apply to China, it applies to the entire world. So the weaker the Chinese currency gets, the higher the risks there are to places outside of China as well as China itself. And that brings us to gold. Last Friday, gold in the United States in U.S. dollar terms, gold was just about $2,400 to the ounce, which is an all-time high for gold. That's not an inflation signal. That's not people flooding into gold as a haven for the dollar to collapse. That's safe haven buying for all of the same reasons that we always talk about here. Disinflation and deflation, lower interest rates. And a lot of that safe haven, not inflation demand, is coming from China itself. Even Bloomberg has tied all of these loose threads together because they're not really that loose. The disinflationary, deflationary potential in economic weakness, oil destroying demand, and the really difficult situation that the Chinese find for themselves. Here's what Bloomberg wrote about gold in China just from a couple days ago. Worsening geopolitical tensions, including war in the Middle East and Ukraine, and the prospect of lower interest rates in the U.S. all burnish gold's billing as an investment. Yes, lower interest rates. But juicing the rally is unrelenting Chinese demand, as retail shoppers, fund investors, futures traders, and even the central bank look to bullion as a store of value in uncertain times. China and India have typically vied over the title of world's biggest buyer, but that shifted last year, as Chinese consumption of jewelry, bars, and coins swelled to record levels. China's gold jewelry demand rose 10%, while India's fell 6%. And most important of all, Chinese bar and coin investments, meanwhile, surged 28%. Gold is safe haven. Gold is China's falling apart. Gold is all of these things tied together. Oil prices are not inflationary. Yes, they add to CPIs in the short run, but inevitably they destroy demand, especially when they're rising for supply reasons. If demand is rising and pulling oil up with it, that's one thing. But that's not what we're seeing. In fact, over the last year, it's almost entirely about supply factors. And as supply gets restricted, oil prices go up. Even the U.S. economy that's supposedly booming suffers the downside consequences. And we got that in the PMIs today, especially the services and composite. We already know that China's a mess, and all of the market indications as well as recent statistics suggest that it's going to become even more of a mess, which raises the dangers. U.S. may be weaker, not booming, than everybody currently believes. At the same time, we know China's a mess, but it's becoming more of a mess. And those two things, if they ever do collide, gets you to what the financial stability report was talking about as far as rising fears of a severe U.S. global recession, as well as what markets are pricing, even U.S. treasuries, when you consider the unpredictability of the Federal Reserve. The bond market, stable, Chinese bond market, rates going lower, and behind all of it, this huge demand for safe haven in gold, and a lot of that coming from China too. Weak U.S., mess in China, suddenly it all makes a lot of sense. What was in the rest of the Fed's financial stability report, and how did that relate to the current credit environment? Well, that's the video I've got linked below. As always, thank you very much for joining me. Huge thank you, Eurodoll University members and Eurodoll University subscribers. And until next time, take care.